the hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We are now on the air. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Thank you for hanging in there with me, everybody. And this is the talk of our time.
The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I am glad.
Oh, okay. All right, that was good.
I mean, I am so elated to be. Okay, let me start again. I am so elated to be here Thursday, and it is one of those days where you just feel good about everything. You feel good about so much, and I want to say something. We're having some weather in Chicago. I mean, we're having some cold weather. I just got through listening to the meteorologists. They're talking about. Once again, they're talking about the polar vortex, as if we don't have one right now, because it feels like it's, wow, I mean, this is winter. I mean, it's February. I mean, it's if it's cold where you are, stay warm. But if it's warm where you are, send some of that warmth this way, please. Okay. All right. You're listening to George Wilder Jr. on Blog Talk Radio, the Wilder Network. Look me up on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm all over the place. It's not hard to find me. And I want to thank everybody who have made my short story on Amazon.com, made that number one. Give yourself a hand, everybody. You know who you are. And I want to thank you for that. I mean, and thank you for all your kind wishes. And thank you for all of your feedback on everything, just about everything that I do. And I totally appreciate that, because this show is here because of you, not me, because of you. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I really do. I really do. Thank you for being on the show. So let's move right along. Okay. Okay. We've got a lot to talk about. I don't know if I can get all of this stuff in, but 99 cents gas. Can you believe that? 99 cents a gallon gas. It's too bad I don't drive anymore, right? But I must have been a kid when it was first, when 99 cents gas was here. And, you know, so I guess that has to be great news for a lot of the motorists around town. So you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Okay, we just got through talking about the polar vortex, and I want to tell everybody to make sure that you vote, and because that's the only way we're going to change things around here. We have to vote. We have to make our voices heard. We're not helpless. We are not helpless. We're only helpless if we do not vote. And if we do not vote, do not ever think if you don't vote that your vote will not count. Even if you don't vote, do not vote, your vote still counts. It still counts. So why not vote to let it count than to not vote and let it count? You know what I'm saying? All right, let's go to the phones right quick. Let's see. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Welcome aboard. Heather?
Yeah, hi, I'm here.
You know, I said Heather. I was hesitant to say your last name because I didn't want to mispronounce it.
Yeah, no worries. It's kind of a weird one. It's Choate.
Choke?
Yeah, Choate. Rhymes with goat.
Choate. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't say it because I would have totally screwed it up. All right. Okay. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here because believe it or not, I'm on your website, and heatherchoate.com, I am on your website, and I'm looking at something that says, Fighting for Our Lives. This is a book, right? This is a memoir by best-selling author Heather Choate, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. So are you 29 or are you just... this happened
just
when you were 29.
30. Yeah.
Oh, you're 30.
Oh,
okay.
I'm 30
now. You're still young. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And you were diagnosed with breast cancer. You were 10 weeks pregnant with your sixth child.
Yeah, that's it.
And you were told that you were at risk due to the fast, speeding, and highly dangerous cancer. Can you explain some of that to the audience?
Yeah, absolutely. So we were so excited to find out that we were expecting baby number six. I'm kind of like addicted to babies. I just love them.
Yeah, you know what? I was going to say, wow, 30 years old and six kids. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I need some help for that addiction, but I think it's a healthy one, so it'll be okay. so we found out we were having baby number six, and I went in for my first appointment. And my midwife was like, okay, did you have any concerns? And I told her, yeah, I've actually noticed kind of a lump on my left breast, but I thought it was just from nursing my other baby. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of went from there. She wanted to get it checked out. And then they did a biopsy, and the whole time the doctors and the nurses were saying, oh, you're so young, you're so healthy, you have no history of any kind of cancer, you know, like really like, downplaying it, saying, oh, it's going to be nothing. It's going to be nothing. But then the results of the biopsy came in, and I'll never forget, I was sitting on the back porch of our house in Colorado. The kids were outside playing, and my midwife called me and told me, and she said, Heather, it's cancer.
Wow, that had to just knock you out. I mean, wow. And after believing that the doctor said it was nothing, you know,
Right. Well, they're saying most likely nothing. You know, they'll never confirm anything, those doctors.
Oh, most likely nothing. Okay.
Right, until the results come in. And so...
It's all about money.
Yeah. It just you know, rattled me. I was not expecting that whatsoever. Of course, it was there in the back of our minds, but we're thinking, there's no way. I'm so young and I'm pregnant. So then immediately my thoughts turned to the baby and what that would mean for this new little life growing in me. So then we met with our first doctor down in Durango, and he told us that because the cancer I had was feeding off of hormones, there's some cancers that are like hormone receptive.
Yes.
But the hormones from the pregnancy were making the cancer grow even faster. and it had already spread to my lymph nodes, making it at least stage 3. And they presumed that it had spread beyond that, but they couldn't do the scans because I was pregnant. So mm-hmm. he said that I needed to abort the baby, otherwise I was risking my life. And that and the outcome would not be good.
And you totally refused. Heather?
Yeah, sorry. What was that?
I thought we... Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I looked him right in the eye and I said, you know, it's not even a decision for me. I already know what I'm going to do. I said, I'd rather die than take the life of my baby. And so then we went to several other opinions and we heard the same information that in a lot of these cases, the baby will make it, but then the mom's not because the cancer just spreads so rapidly. And we just stayed really firm, my husband and I, in our decision that we would keep our baby and hold fast to that vision that it would work out, even though we didn't know how, and it didn't even seem like possible. And then mm-hmm. just through a lot of just, I would call it miracles and blessings, like we were led to find the oncologist in Denver that is one of 5 that treat pregnant women with cancer.
Oh, okay.
And her name
Great.
Is Dr. Borges. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we went up to meet with her, and she explained that there are certain types of chemo that you can do while pregnant that are safer for the baby and can still help slow down the, you know, the growth of the tumor and the cancer and everything.
Yeah.
And that was a huge, huge relief to us to see someone who had...
It's a huge relief to me also.
Yeah, I know. It's like, what do you do in that situation? It's so rare.
Yeah.
And so we set out a treatment plan. I went through 4 rounds of chemo while pregnant. I lost all my hair. So that's kind of the cover image there is my big fat pregnant belly and my bald head.
Oh, you're beautiful. You look great. Yeah.
Thank you. I actually got whistled at once, which I thought was hilarious. At a gas station, I was like, man, I guess there's some people out there looking for a pregnant lady with no hair. So that made me laugh. But, and then we did surgery at 28 weeks. We did a complete left mastectomy. And that was mm-hmm. honestly one of the most terrifying moments for me because we didn't know if they would have to take the baby during the surgery. And if I would wake up and they would have to take her by emergency C-section. So that was just, I had to do a lot of deep breathing and, meditation beforehand to get my mindset in the right place. I feel like the hardest thing was that fear, you know, that was like my biggest enemy was myself, my own fear. And, I just couldn't give into that. I just had to, you know, not ignore it, but just say, okay, I'm afraid. And that's okay for this moment. I'm just going to keep going forward anyway. So it was a huge growing experience as far as that went, like in my self-development, for sure.
I mean, you were, it's like the title of your book, Fighting for Our Lives. You were or are a fighter. You weren't going to let this thing take your baby away from you or your life. I mean,
right.
That's why you went looking for second and third opinions, you know.
Yeah.
Because you knew somebody really out there important. Was someone out there somewhere could help you. Yeah.
Yes. Right. And I think that's really important for anyone like facing, it could be a health crisis, but it could be anything. Like we go to these experts, these people that we trust, but sometimes what they say conflicts with like the feeling that we have in our heart, in our gut, and to stay true to that, you know.
Yes.
Even when the doctors or whoever it is in your life, an authority figure is telling you this is what you really should do, but it doesn't fit with you, whatever that is, then just stay true to that gut feeling and that intuition because it will lead you right. Like there's so much more power I think we have within ourselves than we recognize.
Yeah. And that's what I always tell people. I mean, if you're going to the doctor, doctors are great, but they're just human. They're human like we are, and they can make mistakes. and they can misdiagnose. I think I was misdiagnosed one time, and until I went and got a second and third opinion. Mm-hmm. But what I like about you is that you put your life story into a book, and you're trying to help others out there who are maybe experiencing some of the same things that you have with this, and you're trying to help others. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like it's so important to do that when you've learned some lessons and you might be able to help uplift someone else. And it's
right,
not just
exactly.
for people with cancer, but it's like all of us, we all have hard times. Like we lose our job or
yeah.
we lose a loved one. You know, we have financial crises, you know, depression, all kinds of things that we all face. And it's like, what do? We can't control what happens to us, but we can control what we do about it. I think that's like my primary
mm-hmm.
message is
mm-hmm.
to make that choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How important was support, your husband and family, other family, while you were going through this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I was really, really blessed in that way. My husband was
mm-hmm.
incredible. He took care of me, our five kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we had the new baby, he was basically Mr. Mom, getting up with her in the middle of the night and
yeah.
took care of her more than I did the first 6 months. He was
wow.
incredible support. And then definitely
wow,
had a lot of incredible
wow.
friends and neighbors, family members, and then strangers that would help us out.
Wow.
We had a GoFundMe, and like so many people donated. It was just amazing to help us out with all the travel expenses and everything.
And,
so.
and that kind of made everything a lot easier, having that support base, people there that's, you know, telling you to always think and be positive.
Absolutely, right.
Mm-hmm.
And then also just supporting me even when I wasn't strong or positive, but to say, you know, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
You know, we're still here for you and you can keep going and we'll do whatever we need to help you out. I was a pretty independent person before, so it's hard
mm-hmm.
for me to accept help. I feel like, you know, I chose to have five kids, so I need to
mm-hmm.
raise them. And so to let other people come and help with them and help watch them and help clean my house. This was a challenge for me at first, but I just knew I had to surrender that, I guess a little bit of pride, and just allow others to help me and know that it was okay.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us something about the book that you've written?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a memoir, Fighting mm-hmm. for Our Lives. I'm also a fiction
uh-huh.
author, but writing is really, really good therapy for me. It just kind of gets all the craziness in my head out. So I primarily started writing this. It's actually just my journal entries. And I wasn't intending to make it a book. So it literally is like my journal. So it's very, very raw. And
it's kind of personal, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely personal.
Yeah.
In my fiction books, I kind of hide behind my characters, but in this, it's just me, like, totally exposed.
We all do.
The good, the bad, the pretty, the ugly, you know, it's all there. And I was writing this, and a primary reason why I really wanted to keep a really accurate recording of our journey was because, well, honestly, like,
mm-hmm.
this gets hard for me to, harder to say it, but I didn't know if I was going to be there. Sorry. To raise my daughter. You know, I didn't know if she would even know who I was. And I wanted her to be able to get to know me in some way, if that's all I had to leave her, you know? And I wanted her to understand why I made the choice that I did. And for my other children, who are all very young right now, but when they grew up and got a little bit older, they could understand why Mom did what she did. You know,
mm-hmm.
so that was another big reason for me.
Yeah. You know what? I did a memoir. I wrote about my life, everything
mm-hmm.
in my life. And I wrote that book. I didn't write it for me. I wrote it for my family.
Yeah.
I wrote it for my family to try, because a lot of people in my family, a lot of relatives, they didn't know me at all. They knew I existed, but they didn't know anything really personal about me. So I written a memoir for them. I didn't actually write it for me or
mm-hmm.
no one else, because I wanted them to know who George Wilder Jr. was or is.
Right.
And I wrote it for them. You know, other people are buying it and reading it, but hopefully, but but yeah. I actually wrote it for them. And because I wanted them to, and also wrote it for my son because he knows daddy as, you know, someone around the house who supports him, but he doesn't know some of the struggles and some of the adversities that I've suffered through. And I try to put that down in the book. And you're doing the same thing, and that's great.
Yeah.
For your children.
Mm-hmm. Right. I totally honor that. For
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you have an excerpt of the book? You would like a small excerpt?
Sure. Are we talking a couple paragraphs or what?
Yeah. I don't know, one or two pages maybe.
This is hard. I don't usually read this, so bear with me here.
But you wrote it,
okay.
Right?
I did write it, but it's just very raw. You know what I'm saying? It puts me back in that moment, and that can be hard. So, okay. So
like
this is
say,
an entry from Saturday, June 21st, mm-hmm. 2014. This is 3 days after I found out I was diagnosed.
Okay.
My beautiful children are playing all around me. I'm in the middle of an epic battle of Power Rangers versus ogres. Morgan is laying on my pillow. I'm dead, she says. How I love them. It is shocking how precious such normal moments are to me. I want to talk to you about your decision, Ben's friend told him this week early in the workday. I want you to really consider terminating the pregnancy. You have your wife and 5 children to think about. Ben said he was pretty taken back. His friend then told him that he knew of a woman in similar circumstances. She was pregnant when she was diagnosed with breast cancer. She chose not to terminate the pregnancy. The baby lived. The mother did not. That made this pretty real. I knew that was the risk, but hearing someone they knew was another shock. I also know a woman who was diagnosed with colon cancer during her pregnancy, and she and the baby were both fine.
Mm.
They're healthy and well now. Miracles can occur.
Mm-hmm.
I have faith that they will, but I'm not going to put blinders on and ignore the danger of our decision. We're the ones that have to live with the consequences. I can understand where people are coming from when they tell us that. They are scared. They love me and don't want to lose me. My father wrote me a letter reiterating what he told me on the phone. There is no way you should rush to any decisions until you know the full picture. But as referenced before, I have served in stakes and wards across the country and have seen countless families reach crucial decisions. Some failed, some succeeded. Some tried and tried to get things right. But I do feel that it would be extremely wise to keep in mind the best interests of your 5 beautiful children who need their mother's constant mm-hmm. love, focus, and attention. These days will pass quickly, and suddenly they will be adults who will look back at their mother who stood central in their lives and preparing them for life. I can tell how scared he is, and my heart goes out to him. One of my dear extended family members expressed a similar view. I told her abortion was not something I was willing to consider. She said, but you need to think about your 5 children. She is right. I do, and I have. Believe me, I've thought about this more than anyone. But when I hear these things, something in my heart screams out, I don't have 5 children. I have 6. 5 mm-hmm. are born. 1 is coming. I must think about all of them. I'm just going to skip ahead to this last paragraph here.
Mm.
It's amazing how much you can love someone that you've never even met. And that will be the end for now.
Okay, great. You was great. I was scrolling through your website, and this book is basically dealing with doubt and insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
Discovering who they are and what true beauty is. Renewing their passion. I mean, you bullet pointing these. Negotiating family mm-hmm. strife. Releasing relenting regrets. That's great. Establishing a mother's role in society. Seceding against temptations, weathering their worst fears. This is great. This is beautiful. Pressing on against fatigue and illness. And you've done that, haven't you?
Yeah, I can say it's been crazy hard. Yeah, unbelievably hard. My heart goes out to anyone who's ever faced challenges like this. And just so grateful for the support that we have along the way.
Unrooting bitterness, learning to rely upon God's will and plan. Heather, where can readers and listeners find your book?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's available on Amazon and Audible.com. Mm-hmm. It is an audiobook just recently, and it's also paperback and ebook form.
Okay, so people can download it on their Kindle.
Absolutely. Yep.
Great. That's wonderful. I think I'm going to download it. I'm going to go get it. I think it's a great book. I love books where you read and you can actually learn something from or be educated from. And I love books that can educate me on something that I absolutely know nothing about.
Yeah.
At times. And this is one of those books. This is one of those books. And the fact is that you're out there trying to motivate and help others through your own experience in case someone else is going through something as rare as this, because I never heard of it before. I never heard of something a doctor saying if you got cancer, but you're going to have to abort your baby, or if you don't do that, you're going to die. That's you know, kind of unsettling, but it's, you know, it's something that people can, where they can learn from.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
I wish you all the luck. I wish you all the luck with this. I know you're probably still going through some things, you know, so I wish you a lot of luck. And but you know, different situations at different times and
right.
things like that. And I wish you a lot of luck in the world, and I wish you I don't know how to say it, positiveness and greatness. And I wish hope you get better and stuff like that. Give everybody your website.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's www.heatherchoate.com.
All right, Heather Choate on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Pick up her book. It's a great book. I'm looking at it right now. It's called Fighting for Our Lives, and it is beautiful. Thank you for being on the show. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much, George. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye, thanks.
All righty. What we got here? Heather Choate was just on the show. I'm going to take a quick break. We will be right back. Stay with me. This is the George Wilder Jr. Show. Okay. Okay, my thanks to Heather Choit for being on the George Wilder Jr. Show. She was diagnosed with breast cancer, and at the age of 39, she's a best-selling author. She was 10 weeks pregnant with her sixth child. Her unborn baby was a risk due to the fast-spreading and highly dangerous cancer in Heather's body that had already spread to her lymph nodes. Doctors told her that she needed to abort her baby to save her life. Heather told them, "I'd rather die than to take the life of my baby." And my hat is off to her. Thanks for being on the show, Heather. All right, let's move right along. Okay, we are still without a budget in the city of Chicago. This is something. I'm moving from a great author and someone who's been diagnosed with breast cancer to no state budget in the state of Illinois. I guess that goes from one segment to the next segment of the show. All righty. Okay, we have no budget in the state of Illinois, and that's pissing me off. That's pissing a lot of people off. I mean, we have a governor, Bruce Rauner. And I've heard this on other talk shows, too. We have a governor, and I've witnessed some of the things that I'm getting ready to talk about. This guy doesn't know the first thing about governing. He doesn't know. I'm pretty sure he's learning on the curve. He's been in office for over a year now, and we still have no state budget. There is nothing that he can really appointments. I mean, there are so many people in the state of Illinois who are so pissed off at this guy. If he doesn't want to do his job, quit and go find something else to do. If he doesn't want to do the job of the state in the state of Illinois, the job he has to do as a politician, let him quit and do something else. Let somebody else take over the reins as governor, the leader of this state. Because Bruce Rauner is not doing anything for this state. Neither is Michael Madigan. They're sitting and just letting this state just fall off a damn cliff. The other day, I spoke about this on yesterday's show. Barack Obama was in town trying to get these guys together, but we all know that was a waste of time. Rauner is stuck steadfast and stuck on wanting to bust unions, break unions, right to work. He's stuck on that. The Democratic legislature said, no, that's not going to happen, and that's where we are right now. Rauner's been trying to bust unions, wanting to bust unions, wanting to take over the city of Chicago and public schools from day one. From day one. And he has accomplished none of that. So therefore, what does he do? He stopped paying the state's bills. Businesses are leaving. People are leaving the state of Illinois. That's no lie. They are leaving. Businesses, they do not want to come here, because this is a toxic climate without a state budget. And the state of Illinois is so, I mean, the state of Illinois owes so much money. I can't even pronounce it. It's in the billions. They owe so much money. And the only way they are going to have to deal with that debt, that humongous debt that's piling up every day in the state of Illinois, is to raise taxes, more taxes. Yeah, people, more taxes. If this doesn't run you out of the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago, I don't know what will. More taxes. Rauner is not hurt by any of this, but he's causing such hurt on working people. People with part-time jobs who are struggling. People who are working but still can't even afford an apartment. He's causing so much pain, and it doesn't bother him. It doesn't bother him. I and a lot of other people are saying, why don't this guy be recalled? Throw him out of office. He's not doing his job. This mess in this state is caused by one man. For not signing a budget. If you and I didn't pay our bills, they'd be coming after us. They have collection agencies all up our ass. And a lot of times if you don't pay your bills and this goes on your credit record, you can't even get a job. The employer is going to say, hey, well, we can't allow you to work here. You pay your bills. This is the same thing with Rauner. He's not paying the state's bills, but yet he still gets to keep his office. He still has a job, and he's not doing his job. Period. Period. Every now and then he'll get his face on television, blow out and start blowing out a lot of words, and then all of a sudden you don't see this guy anymore. He's gone until the next time he has something to say that's not going to resonate with anybody, but he wants people to know that he's trying. We could have a budget in less than 10 minutes if this guy got up off his ass and decided that he wanted to pull Illinois out of the humdrums that he put it in. The Chicago public schools are in a mess. I just got through talking to my son about that. They've cut some of his after-school programs. They have cut his gym program. He goes to a charter school, but some charter schools are still a part of public schools because they're receiving public money. But the majority of charter schools, they don't have unions. And this is why so many Republicans support charter schools, because charter schools are unionless, you know, and this is why they are not in support of public schools, because of the unions. Well, where my son goes, there is no union, you know, there's no union. So this is why sometimes cities put more money into charter schools, because there's no union. I mean, teachers at a charter school can be fired for just looking at the principal the wrong way, or the director, or whoever's in charge of that particular school. Okay, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. I will be right back, folks. Stay with me if we can find. And you know what? This is Black History Month. I always got to play something on this show pertaining to Black history. So we'll do that as soon as I come back. Let me see. We got a Martin Luther King. I don't think we're going to do I'll Have a Dream. That's too long. All right. We'll be right back.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
Country. Maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over that. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. And so just as I say, we aren't going to let any dogs or water hoses turn us around. We aren't going to let any injunction turn us around. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. Tonight, I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Yeah, that's always that speech. That's part of the speech. That's some of the speech. Right before he was assassinated, from my understanding, and that's always get my adrenaline going. Okay, that's Martin Luther King's last speech, at least parts of it. Okay, let's move right along. They're saying that Bernie Sanders is questioning Obama's leadership. There's a lot of people questioning Obama's leadership. But you got so many people out here who are trying to tell other people how to vote. You got this a bunch of black people calling themselves the Black Caucus or the Black This or the Black That, this group of black people telling people how to vote as if we don't know how to vote or who to vote for. Telling people how to vote, who to vote for, is crazy. You can't tell me who to vote for and not to vote for. And I hope people realize this. But you know what? These people are going to keep trying to get you to vote for the candidate that they want. It may not be the candidate that you want, but it's the candidate that they want. So they want you to vote for the candidates that they like. That's not going to happen. People, think for yourself. Stop letting people think for you. Stop letting people tell you what to do, who to vote for, who not to vote for. Just because they like that person, they're going to try to convince you that you should be liking that person. If you don't know who to vote for or how to choose the right person to vote for, because if you don't know who to vote for, you may just wind up voting against your own interest or you may wind up not voting at all. But use your own head. Use your own brain. You are intelligent. You're smart. You know who you want to vote for. I know who I'm going to vote for. Obviously, there's no doubt about it. Obama is supporting Hillary Clinton because in some ways, if Hillary Clinton gets the nomination, millions of people around the United States feel that Hillary Clinton will be in Obama third term. You know what? I just about think she'll be an Obama third term. You know why? Because both Hillary Clinton and Obama, they are mainstream Wall Street. They take money from Wall Street. You know, I mean, if you think about Obama playing golf, Martha's Vineyard. You know, I mean, that's nothing but rich people, you know. And who put Obama in office? Grassroots people, me, you, you know. So there's no doubt of him supporting Hillary. But that doesn't mean that a whole bunch of African Americans going to go support Hillary because they support Obama. Some people will, some won't. But I'm thinking the majority will not. I'm a Bernie Sanders. I like Bernie Sanders. Okay, and the civil rights hero, what they call him, John, who they call him, John Lewis, he's saying Sanders doesn't know much of anything, especially foreign policy. And this John Lewis, who I believe walked with Martin Luther King, is saying, the hell with Sanders, vote for Hillary Clinton. He doesn't have it. Bernie Sanders' fundraising is on fire. People are sending him cash, loads of cash. So therefore, if you think about it, a lot of those people, they're not listening to the naysayers on Bernie Sanders. They want Bernie because why? Bernie seems more trustworthy. He's not just an old man. He's not 74. That's young. That's young. There's people calling him, you know, Dr. Doolittle or... He's vibrant. He's smart. He's intelligent. He knows the attacks are going to come. He is ready for them. And his fundraising people are sending him money in droves to tell him to keep going. So as I've just got through saying, people, do vote your conscience. There's going to be 1,000 people out there, hundreds of groups telling you who they want you to vote for. You vote for who you want in the office. You use your own brain, your own consciousness, your own research. You've been out there. You've seen Bernie talk. You've seen him travel around the United States. You've seen him and witnessed him beat the hell out of Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire. Now they're saying that with this South Carolina thing that Bernie could lose because I believe Hillary Clinton is up, wow, 97% to 17%, something to that effect. She has a tremendous lead in South Carolina, tremendous over him. But do not count Bernie Sanders out. Remember Iowa. He virtually tied her in Iowa, and he was in the basement. He came up out of that basement and went to the, what, penthouse in terms of his poll numbers rising. So don't count him out. He could win South Carolina, even though he's in the doldrums. He just may be able to pull it out because I'm looking at it right now. The fundraising is just through the roof for Bernie Sanders. And it just pisses me off when there's so many African-American groups and people with influence getting on the radio, getting on television, and trying to tell you and I who to vote for, as if we don't have brains to do it ourselves. I admit some people out there do not have brains. But we're going to do this. We are going to do this. Let me get back to the Illinois budget. This has got to stop. This is 8 months. I'm reiterating myself. I'm repeating myself. I'm even repeating myself from 6 months ago on this show. I'm virtually saying the same thing. And I will keep saying the same thing about the budget. Get a budget, pass a budget, until a budget is finally passed. That could be way past November 2016, after the presidential election. We still may not have a budget. Thing has got to happen. We've got to find a way to throw this guy out of office or get him moving on signing a budget. He is not going to get the Democrats to break on their values and what they believe in. That's not going to happen. The legislature in Illinois is Democratic, both the House and the Senate, filled with nothing but Democrats. Rauner proposes a lot of things, but that's all they are, proposals. Proposals. It cannot go anywhere without legislation. It ain't going to happen. He wanted to control schools. That's not going to happen. He wanted to break unions. That's not going to happen. But he will not sign a budget. He's like a child. You know, if he doesn't get his way, give me my toy and I'm going home. You know, and then once he gets home, he starts looking back and blaming everybody. There's no one to blame for this state mess but Bruce Rauner. Believe me, he's the only one to blame. He's got his surrogates. He's got his flunkies going all around the state saying that it's the Democrats. Of course, they're going to say anything he tells them, and they're going to do anything he tells them because he's what? He's paying them. The guy is taking money from the programs, public money, and giving it to the private sector. This is what he wants, and this is what he's doing. This is what he and his cronies are doing, his millionaire buddies are doing, and want to do more harm to Illinois. They don't give a damn about people on food stamps. They don't give a damn about people getting a small welfare check. They don't give a damn about you working a part-time job and busting your ass to take care of your family. They don't care. They don't care if you work for the state of Illinois or the city of Chicago. They don't give a damn about that. They're going to look to try to make things hard for you, lower your pay, throw you out of a job. Because if Bruce Rauner gets his way and busts unions, that's going to be horrific. Because if he dismantles unions, that means you have no more workplace protection. That supervisor or that manager can fire you as quick as you can look up and down. Your pay will be lowered. You will be treated badly. You have no recall. You have nothing. You know, I mean, if you call in sick and say, I'm sick, hey, you can be fired for not coming to work. And you may truly be sick. The state of Illinois, the reason why I harp so much on the state of Illinois is because I live in the state of Illinois. And I hate to see this beautiful state, this once beautiful state, go down the tubes because someone, the governor actually, wants to be another Scott Walker in Wisconsin. Scott Walker, the governor in Wisconsin, this guy has busted unions left and right. There is no union representation in Wisconsin. And people can't stand this man, but yet they fail to recall him. Why was Scott Walker failed? Why did they fail in recalling Scott Walker? Because a lot of people didn't get out there to vote for the recall. A lot of people were just stupid enough to vote for Scott Walker to remain in office. I've witnessed some of those stupid people. I mean, it's phenomenal. We got a lot of stupid people in the state of Illinois, actually in America, who think they're smart, you know. So you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, people. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for being here. I'll be right back. You want to hear something beautiful? The Super Bowl national anthem sung by Lady Gaga. I mean, she has talent. You know what? I used to think that she did not have talent. But when I saw her and heard her sing the national anthem at this past Super Bowl, the 50th Super Bowl, I said, wow, the young lady has talent. And also, previously, I had seen her on PBS with doing a duet with Tony Bennett. I think they did a few albums together, a couple of albums, and she was phenomenal. She was not that crazy chick walking up and down the street wearing an egg. She is a talented young lady. And this will prove it to you. If you don't know Lady Gaga, she's got an awful name, but she has talent. Listen to this. Listen.
To honor America and perform our national anthem, please welcome Academy Award nominee and 6-time Grammy winner, Lady Gaga.
Cut off a little bit. But anyway, she has talent. That was kind of short, shorter than I thought it would be. But anyway, she has talent. And the only thing I know about her is like Poker Face. My son's favorite song by her is called Poker Face. And it's nothing like the anthem you just heard. So you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Follow me all over the place. I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook. I'm on even on Amazon.com. I got lots of books up there. And I got so many of them. I had somebody come on the show and say, George, do you know how many books you've got on Amazon? I said, no. She said, well, about 20. That many. Okay. Okay. So follow me all over the place. Make sure you go to Amazon, download some of that stuff. It's great, especially Mary. Mary, rest in peace. And I want to say this again. I want to thank everybody for making that number one. I think it has dropped by now, but it was at number one. But that it doesn't make it. It's not a good story. A great story, if I can say it. It's a great story. So you guys check that out. Check out Amazon. check out my works, and also check out author Heather Schoat. Her book, Living let me see if I got the title, Fighting for Our Lives. Check that out. It's a great book. Like I told it before on the show, I'm going to download it. I'm going to read it, and I'm going to try and pass it on what I learned. But you make sure you download it, and you read it, and you pass on what you learn. Okay, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, and I was talking momentarily about the state budget. We still have no budget in the state of Illinois, and that's pissing a lot of people off. It's pissing me off. It's just ridiculous that we got to wade through all this garbage with these politicians and still do not have a budget. The people of this state is hurting. Although the politicians who are causing this tragedy and catastrophe, they're not hurting. They're rich. Madigan is rich. Rauner is rich. But the people that they're hurting are not. People that they're hurting are poor. The middle class. The working people. The people who are struggling to feed their kids and keep a roof over their heads. These are the people that these knucklehead politicians are hurting and don't seem to care. They don't seem to care. This is a rally against the budget. This is a clip. All right.
Let me just say this. While we become outraged with all the violence in Chicago, we've got to connect the dots. It is no coincidence that homicides are up and shootings are up. This weekend, 2 killed, 45 shot this weekend. And all this is going on while the governor has cut all summer employment jobs, and while the governor has ended all anti-violence jobs in this state. It's no coincidence when you're on the street and you're abandoned by the government why violence is up in this city and why violence is up in this state. The governor is a co-conspirator of what's going on right now in the streets of Chicago. We got to make him understand that Illinois is not another business investment of his. Illinois is a state where there's people whose lives are at risk. Don't treat this like some business investment, Bruce. Treat this like there's people who elected you. This is our money. This is tax money. We have a say so in what happens with this.
How dare this man close the doors on our children? What's the difference in what he's doing now than Bull Connor did back in the day? We're not going to take it, ladies and gentlemen. The governor wants to balance the budget off of poor people, off of handicapped people, off of the mentally ill. Ladies and gentlemen, he wants to balance the budget off our baby. But guess what? Have you ever heard him talking about telling his corporate people to take a pay cut?
No.
Have you ever heard him talk about reducing some of those corporate loopholes?
No.
Have you ever heard him talking about, okay, we have been in the crisis here in Illinois. It's not the Republicans' fault. It's not the Democrats' fault. It's really the economy. And everybody has not been paying their fair share. There's some boys on the sales street that make billions of billions of dollars. And I'm like the governor, quite frankly. I don't want to raise taxes, but I want everybody to pay their fair share. And they are making some transactions that they're not paying taxes on. So the only thing I'm saying to the governor, make sure that everybody's in, including my baby, and nobody's left out, including your friends. So with that being said, Mr. Governor, let us go back to Springfield. You want a budget? Let's talk about a budget. Let us gather the money from the guys on LaSalle Street and let's have a financial transaction tax. And then when we get finished doing that, Mr. Governor, let's develop our own bank like North Dakota. And if that's not enough, Mr. Governor, let's get rid of the insurance industry and have a single payer health care so everybody can truly be in and nobody be left out.
Don't mess with my children.
know something? We don't have to put up with a bully. A bully cannot win when people stand together. A bully cannot win when you're standing with your brothers and your sisters. A bully can't win when you build coalitions in the neighborhood. A bully only wins when you let them. Right now we have a coalition of individuals because we understand what Governor Rauner does not understand, and that is everything is connected. We are connected to one another. Child care is connected to a good education. Education is connected to health care, because you're not going to learn if you're sick. You're not going to learn if you're hungry. That's connected to a good job. That's connected to this state. This is not about one person who doesn't want to turn us around. He wants to turn us backwards. We are not going backwards. This is not we're going to be standing up here in the street, dancing, working for free. This is our state. This is not Ronnerville. This is not Brook City. No, this is the city and the state of the people of Illinois that deserve the best that it has to offer. We are not going to be held hostage. We're not going to be held against our will. Our children are not going to be the cannon fodder to fight your fight. This is something that needs to be addressed. We want the governor as your voice and as your ears down in Springfield. We want the governor to come to the table not talking about things that doesn't need. We don't need to be talking about remapping. A budget has nothing to do with remapping. It doesn't have to be a term limit. It's called come out and vote. Get the vote. That we need to be talking about. How do we fund those essential things that make us competitive, not only in the United States, but in the global economy? This is not about being a vulture capitalist. Who do you know, where do you know that a CEO tears down his own business just so he can make more money? Vulture capitalists. That's what they do. This is not a vulture capitalist situation. This is a budget about people, the budget about numbers, or that in his mind, a budget about numbers. There's a face on every dollar that's in the budget. And we want those dollars spent on the things that we need to be the citizens that we can be. And that is making sure that we have not only daycare, but many of you also know we need people working night care. Because this is a 24-hour city, it's a 24-hour fight, and we're going to stay in it for 24 hours as long as it takes. So let's stay together, let's stay connected, and we beat the bully.
All right, he said, we beat the bully. And I agree. I do think Rauner is a bully. He tries to pull it off as if he's Mr. Nice Guy, not being let. We're not letting him do his job. His job is to have a budget for the state of Illinois, and he refuses. As I've just got through saying, Rauner could have a budget in less than a few hours. But he doesn't want it. And that budget will take Illinois out of the doldrum. But every day that we do not have a budget, it just gets worse. The debt goes up. But these politicians, they just sit back and just let this thing happen. They just sit back and just let it happen. Okay, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. 12 minutes left into the show. Let's see what we can sneak in. And I want to like to thank my guest. She was beautiful. She was wonderful. And go to her website. She has a great looking website. HeatherChioate.com. That's Choate. Heather Chioate. I'm having problems pronouncing it. Even she told me how to pronounce it. You know, it's Choate. Go to our website.com and you will see something amazing. Okay. All righty. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let's see if we can. All right.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
Okay, I'm going to play another segment. I'm going to play another clip on getting reviews because there's a lot of authors out there, and I try to chide myself in being a friend to all authors because, like I said on so many shows, we are writers in the Word. And a lot of people write books, but they don't know how to go about getting a review for their book. You never pay for a review, and you want honest reviews. Everybody cannot write reviews. I mean, you've got people out here with 20, 30 books, but never have written a review, a book review of someone else's work in their life. So it's not that easy writing a book review for some people. For me, it's pretty damn easy. For me, I don't see the hard work in it, but some people just can't. Like I said before, I've had a great amount of my work on Amazon downloaded. However, the people who downloaded my work did not leave a review, and it specifically says leave a review. People do not, and if you ask people for reviews, if you ask them more than once for a review, they'll get pissed off. Either they will not give you a review or they will give you a one-star review because they feel it as if you're bugging them to try to review your book. Do not beg, plead for a book review. Ask one time, maybe twice, and that's it. Because the reason why sometimes I would ask someone twice, the same person again for a review, because I may think that person might have forgotten about that I asked that person for a review. You know what I'm saying? You kind of just reminding them that they owe you a review or they should give you a review. But after the second time, you know, they don't review your book, you just leave it alone. You know, just so I want to do this for all of those people who are out there and who have written books and are seeking reviews for their books, honest reviews for their books. I'm just going to play a short clip, just a short amount.
All right, welcome to the show. Our guest today is Heather Hart. She is an international best-selling author and award-winning author, and she works as an author coach at trainingauthors.com. She enjoys working from home, where she spends her days typing away at her computer, brainstorming new marketing ideas, and encouraging other authors to achieve success. So, Heather, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit more about your background. And yeah, cool. So, I mean, what inspired you to start out as an author? Because I know lots of people have the idea to write a book, but they never really, you know, get around to it.
I actually just kind of fell into it, and that doesn't happen to a lot of authors. But I had twins, and that caused me to have four children under 5 years old. So I couldn't afford daycare to work outside the home. So I started volunteering with someone else who already wrote books. And we co-authored our first book, and that just kind of got the ball rolling. And I was a published author before I really even knew what I was doing.
Yeah, awesome. So you had that kind of that relationship with someone that really spurred you on and encouraged you to get it out there.
Definitely.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Well, I know today on the show we want to talk about how to get awesome reviews for people's books on Amazon and, you know, Goodreads and places like that. So tell us, you know, some of your awesome tips on how to get more book reviews.
The best thing that I've ever found to get book reviews is to start a dedicated email list for book reviewers. So you can email them out whenever you have a new book, and then they can respond if they want a free review copy of that book.
The thing is, you got to find the
book reviewers. That is the best way that I have found to get them. As soon as we started our list, it really just transformed the number of reviews we were getting on our books.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So how did you set that whole process up? I mean, what tools were you using? You know, how did you let people know about the opportunity?
Well, by the time we started getting reviews for our books, or started trying to get reviews for our books, we already had a really big following. So all we had to do was send out one email saying, hey, if you'd like to be on our reviewer list, you know, you can apply here. And we just had them sign up for essentially a second email list that we started that was dedicated to reviewers. And we outlined the process really well. What we did was we said, you know, if you'd like a free review copy, you have to agree to review it on Amazon and Goodreads. And if you have a blog, you can review it there as well. And they have to do the FTC disclaimer saying that they got a free copy in exchange for an honest review. And then we just send them a free ebook copy.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So they sign up basically on your website for the email list, and then, you know, they're just on that list waiting until you release a new book, and then you say, hey, we're coming out with a new book, and, you know, as a reviewer, you get it for free, and they have to, like, respond back and say, yes, we want it, and then you send it out, or how's that work?
Yep, that's exactly how it works. So they respond saying, yes, I'd like a copy of this book, and sometimes we ask them, do you want a free Smashwords copy? Do you want us to send you a PDF or Mobi file? You know, how would you like to receive this book? And then they'll let us know what kind of file they want, and we send it to them that way. And we just say, you know, this is our time frame. You know, please post your review before our.
All right. I'll be playing more of that review next week because I'm going to be off Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Those are my off days. Those are the days I'll be playing more of that on how to get book reviews for those authors and writers out there who are curious on how to get more reviews for their book. I'm glad I found that clip because the people asking me, George, how do you get reviews, you know, stuff like that. And listen to the show and you'll find out. All righty. Okay. To the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Oh.
All right, on the Republican side of the aisle, New Hampshire, I'm talking about New Hampshire, Donald Trump got, he received 100,406 votes, 35% of the vote. Ben Carson, 6,509, 2% of the vote. Why is Ben Carson still in the race? Chris Christie and Carly Fiorina, they have been excluded. Why is Ben Carson still in the race? And he has a less amount of votes than they've gotten. That is something to think about. All right, I'm going to say goodbye. Hope you're with me next time. I will be back on Monday at the same time, same place, same time. Bye-bye.